Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of I'm Afraid of Americans, a book release party on Saturday, June 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. The stories of I'm Afraid of Americans are set in a high school in Los Angeles County in the 1980s. They show students, teachers, and support staff busy with daily details, but also living in the history, geography, and dislocations of their time. Author M.F. McAuliffe will read from the collection of stories and sign books. Again, that's I'm Afraid of Americans, a book release party on Saturday, June 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock. Coming up next on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather talks to Prost America writer Gwen DeFries about the next Thorns game and the upcoming Women's World Cup. She also talks to Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno to talk about what life is like for LGBT people who live in more conservative areas of the country. At 11, Between the Covers features an interview with Sofia Shalmayev about her new memoir, Mother Winter. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with your hosts Patricia Welsh, Obi Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
The Heather McCoy Show.
Welcome to The Heather McCoy Show. Later on in the hour, I'll be joined by Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno to talk about what life is like for LGBT-identifying people in the conservative part of the country. In the last segment, we'll be taking your calls, but first, last weekend saw the reopening of Providence Park after a year-long construction project which added 4,000 seats to the facility. Joining me now is Prost America writer Gwen DeFries. Welcome to the show.
Hiya.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Providence Park reopened last week. What are your first takeaways on the newest version of the park?
That it's a lot louder. I mean, the fans have always been loud, but the way the stadium is now set up more encourages like inclusion even more so, even out in, you know, the parts where people who have families and maybe don't want to get as rowdy sit.
Yeah.
Also, that the players have really bought into it. I mean, they always buy into it, but as we saw from that lovely little video that, you know, Emily Mengus and Midge Purse, Jeff Antonello and things posted, they were just as excited for the opening as we were. And that really showed through in their play and everything else.
Is the reason why it's louder is the fact that there's the big, basically adding 4,000 seats, it added like almost a huge wall. And then there's still the old part of the stadium, which has a roof on top of it. Is that acting as an echo? And then that just kind of, and then the Multnomah Athletic Club is kind of acting as a cap too. Is that kind of what you think makes the acoustics seem louder than it was before?
I mean, yes. Plus, just speaking to people and things, a lot of the people used to joke that they would retire, you know, to the South Deck or things like that. A lot of the people who, you know, have gone through Timbers Army, gone through Rivers, and perhaps don't necessarily have the wherewithal to, you know, stand 90 minutes and chant, a lot of them have moved up to, you know, the Tanner Ridge area.
Mm-hmm.
And which means there's going to be a lot of people higher up also making noise, which does help it. As you mentioned, though, the roofs do provide excellent acoustics.
Yeah. The Portland Thorns won their home opener 3-0 against the Chicago Red Stars. Both teams are missing players. The Thorns are missing 9 due to national team duties than most of any team in the NWSL. I was impressed about how prepared the Thorns were for the game. Did you talk to Coach Mark Parsons about what went into the team's preparation for this World Cup period?
Yes. So in regards to preparation, once again, talking about buying into, from the second he came in, one of the things he sort of drove home that every single member, whether it be, you know, somebody on the pitch, somebody on the bench, somebody who might not even be on the bench, right down to, you know, the coaches, the physios, things like that, all of them have an important part to play in the team. Another thing that he did, which is something which the Thorns have hit a stumbling block on before, is that he didn't try and make the players we had left play like the players who were gone. I don't know if you can remember, but back in 2015, one of the major issues with what happened to the team was sort of that they were trying to play as if we still had that sort of lead striker, and he didn't do that, the players didn't do that, they didn't try and adjust themselves, and they didn't try and replace the people who were gone. They played their own game, and as you saw, it worked.
It worked really well, and I was impressed about how free and open the game is with the when the regular team players or national team players are with the team. They can sometimes it kind of things get kind of stuck, and then they get predictable. And this felt a lot more wide open than the normal Thorns. Was that your takeaway from the game too?
Yes. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at any of the stats, but something that sort of impressed me is that we didn't hold possession and we didn't try and hold possession, because that's something that, you know, the Thorns have fallen into the trap of before. They sort of hold possession and they possess themselves to death. They have the majority of it, but they don't really do anything with it. And with this, you know, our pass accuracy wasn't that great. It was like 60-something. Got the exact number here. Yeah, like, for instance, somebody who made a great impact, Midge Purse, only had a passing accuracy of like 44.4%, which sounds bad within itself, but then you look at how she played. She didn't play to necessarily hold and keep possession. They were fast, and they, as you said, they used that unpredictability to ensure that, you know, Chicago didn't know what was coming, and when they saw chances, they just took them.
Yeah. Definitely. You bring up Midge Purse. She scored two goals, almost nearly completing a hat trick. The final was 3-0, but with a couple of breaks, the score could have been 6-0. In the past, she's played an exciting brand of soccer as a midfielder as well. Talk about Midge Purse and her development with the Thorns.
So Midge Purse is somebody, the Thorns got her in from Boston, you know, very tragic. The team dissolved a couple years ago. And coming in, I think it was very clear, at least to her and to Parsons, what they anticipated. But obviously, in the other aspect, we weren't quite certain what to see. And the things which she's always had her incredible speed, and she's always had her work rate, which are more or less the two things we saw her really displaying to the best. And certain other things which she's developed, which perhaps has meant that she's not quite been seen in the way we want her to, because obviously she has had her chances with the national team players. She even had a call-up a lot with the national team itself. She didn't get playing time, but she was called into a camp. And I think everybody can see the potential, and she is young and she is still developing, but I think we saw sort of the fruits of her labor on, you know, the home opener.
Definitely. Iceland's national team missed the World Cup, so the Thorns do have the services of Dagny Brynjar's daughter. She was off for pregnancy leave in 2018, but was part of the championship campaign in 2017. I've noticed a huge improvement in Thorne's defense with her playing as a connecting midfielder role to the defense. I feel like she's one of the most unheralded players on the Thorns. Talk about what she brings to the team.
So, just as with any player, I think part of the, you know, lack of hype around her in some sense comes to do with the fact that she is sitting further back and she's looking more at the defensive ends this time than she did previously. You know, when we had her previously, she managed to score a couple of goals. She's tall, so getting her in the box for headers is massively important. But seeing her, the way she plays now, she's sort of the connecting piece that we've had to, you know, shift over this year already. We've seen a couple of different people in that role simply with, you know, injuries, national team call-ups. She might end up being sort of the connection because our the Thorns defense is generally either really, really good with a few mistakes or a lot of mistakes with a few flashes of brilliance. And it really seems to another player who's unheralded in more the international sense, because we definitely know that the visitors and the people in Portland see her work. Emily Mengus, having her being able to connect to somebody who can lead the midfield, like Dagny, and then having connection further up to the front so our strikers and wingers can then get that service or get that communication, is massively important, because as we've seen with, you know, other teams, looking at, for instance, Orlando, if you don't have a midfield, you don't have anything.
Yeah, Orlando has not been the same since Steph Catley took off to Seattle.
Yeah, and it's only become worse this year, because if you look at sort of who they've signed and who they've kept, their defense, it is yet to live to its potential. And they don't have anybody connecting their forward. You know, they've got the people there, but Marta alone cannot be a midfield.
Yeah, well, a lot of what Orlando's been doing has been kind of, I understand why they signed Sydney LaRue, but then they have Rachel Hill and Alex Morgan, so they're top heavy, but there's no midfield and only Ellie Krieger in the backfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you write in your piece, and we saw it go down, Angela Salem went down in the 40th minute of the game completely untouched, which is a fairly scary injury in of itself. Do we have a status update on her condition on her knee?
No update. Immediately after the game, Parsons said that it looked serious, that it looked really bad, but we'd have to wait on the medical team, and there's been no further release, no further communication since then. So obviously, you know, all we can do is wish her the best and hope that if it is something more serious, that she gets the recovery and, you know, attention she needs for that.
Yeah. One of the Red Stars who had a good game despite the score was Casey Short, who in the past was called in to the national team camp by Jill Ellis. One of the consistent criticisms of Jill Ellis is how she comprises her rosters. Do you think Casey Short should be with the national team in France?
I definitely think she should be. There's a couple of outside backs who should probably get a look, probably get a call, but Ellis has her game plan, and part of that game plan apparently includes using wingers and forwards as outside backs.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you can really say about it.
Yeah.
The Thorns are in second place currently in the VSL standings, only trailing a very talented Washington Spirit team, which is incidentally the only team the Thorns have lost to. Let's project into the future. What do you think 2019 has in store for the Thorns?
If they can keep up the level of play that they had at home, I think they can easily, you know, get second, potentially even first. Definitely seeing playoffs in the future for this year again. I think whether or not they get first or second all depends on how many injuries occur and if the sort of morale and attention can be kept up, because as we've seen previously, all it can take is, you know, one or two mental lapses for an entire game to be lost.
Oh, yeah.
And with, obviously, one of the nice things and one of the very sad things about potentially missing Salem now is, despite the fact that we've got a lot of people who aren't starting for the Thorns, you know, don't normally start for the Thorns, they are not an inexperienced rookie side. I mean, we've got Ekstrom, who Dave, a skilled goalkeeper, and in the W League, you know, she's her starter. We've got Mengus and Reynolds, who are both, you know, people who have been around for a while. Mengus has been the stalwart of the Thorns defence since they signed her, more or less. We've got Dagny, who, whilst she has missed some time with pregnancy, is somebody who's been around and who has helped her national team. And then, of course, we've got Klingenberg, who, once again, massively experienced player, both for the national team and on the, you know, club side. She was one of the leaders back when she was with the Dash, and she's come in that role with us in the past couple of years.
The Women's World Cup starts this Friday. Let's do some bracketology. Group A has France, Norway, South Korea, and Nigeria. I see no surprises here. I see France and Norway advancing. What do you have?
I always, and it is yet to happen in the way I want it to. Nigeria is the team that I always want to do well, regardless of, you know, men's, women's.
Yeah.
So I actually have a surprising upset.
Oh.
I have Nigeria second in the group and Norway coming in last. Not because they're not all amazing players, but because of sort of aspects of the mental side.
Yeah, that is definitely an upset if Nigeria were to win that.
Having a chance to top the group and then Nigeria come in, you know, second to the group, giving them a chance to go through.
Yeah. In Group B, we have Germany, Spain, China, South Africa. The Chinese have one very good striker, and the rest of the team is meh. I don't see any upsets in this group either. I think it's going to be Germany and Spain on this one.
Yep. I do have China coming in third, simply because they do have those occasional flashes of brilliance.
Yeah.
I don't see anything from South Africa which suggests to me that they can score enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Group C, we have Italy, Brazil, Australia, and Jamaica. I see Australia and Brazil advancing here, but the biggest surprise of the bracket is how badly Brazil struggles to get second. I think they're going to continue to show stress fractures as Marta ages and the Federation doesn't invest enough money for players around her.
Yep, matching you there.
Yeah, matching me there. Good. So Group D, I think that's the biggest potential for an upset. I have England and Scotland, and Japan's going in home in third. I see Kim Little going off in the midfield and becoming a household name in a World Cup debut. Am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. I would love to see that happen, but I did have Japan going through in second, simply because I can't quite see a collapse of that magnitude. I mean, I could easily be wrong, but
yeah, it's World Cup, you never know.
Yeah.
Group E has Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, and Cameroon. I'm gonna guess no surprises here. Canada and the Netherlands advance.
Yeah.
Group F, Sweden, United States, Chile, and Thailand. I'm taking the US and Sweden. And just a side note, am I crazy? It always seems like the United States are in this and Sweden are in a group together. Just off the top of the head, I know it's this year, 2003 and 2015. Is there a FIFA thing that makes this happen, or?
Nope, I think it's one of those things, kind of like how the Timbers and the Sounders always draw each other in the Open Cup. They've never been able to prove anything. It's supposed to be random, wholly. It does seem to happen quite a bit. Now, do you have Sweden topping the group or the U.S.?
I have the U.S. topping the group.
Same,
yeah. Because Sweden's missing Lolita Shailene. I think she recently retired, and I don't think they have the striking power that they used to when they had Hannah Lundberg even.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, I was going to say, so the main question, of course, is who do you have taking it home?
I have Australia in an upset.
Oh,
yeah, I think even despite having a new coach midstream in the World Cup session, I think Sam Kerr is due. I think we're going to see Rasso help her out with that. And Catley is an amazing midfielder. I think Catley is somebody that the U.S. hasn't had in a very long time since Lauren Cheney retired.
Yep.
So that's kind of how I see it. Our guest has been She writes for Prost America. Her name's Gwyneth DeFries. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Heather McCoy Show.
Thank you, Heather.
Okay. And when we come back, we'll be taking your calls and talking to Jerry Scott of LGBT Fresno. This is the Heather McCoy Show.
till my dying day, and I'll still love you until my dying day.
The Heather McCoy Show.
Welcome back to The Heather McCoy Show. In conjunction with the 1969 Stonewall Riots, June is designated LGBT Pride Month. LGBT people will often escape less accepting places in the country and come to a city like Portland. But what is life like for those in communities where escape is not a viable option, or they would rather stay and fight for the dignity in their hometowns? Here to discuss this is Jason Scott of the LGBT Fresno. In this segment, we're taking your calls. So if, the number is 503-231-8187 to get on board. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much.
LGBT Fresno is a website that acts as a news resource and information blog and website. It was founded in 2004. What have been the greatest gains for LGBT Fresnians in that time site since the website opened?
Well, I think that one of the things that we've seen change over these number of years is that the state overall has become more accepting, and the laws that have been passed at our state capitol in Sacramento have required that areas such as ours have become more progressive in the way that they handle LGBT individuals and youth. So, for example, we have made great strides here in terms of the public school systems, but a lot of those changes came about because our state required those type of changes to be made. So that's one of the things that we've seen, you know, over the past decade plus come about here in Fresno.
What are some of the things that haven't gotten better in terms of LGBT acceptance within Fresno?
Well, one of the things that we still are continuing to work towards is the treatment of crimes by the police departments and how those are prosecuted. So we have had several over the past number of years high-profile hate crimes against transgendered individuals, and our local police department and prosecutors have not, to my knowledge, ever pursued hate crimes enhancements on any of these crimes that have been committed against our community. And that's something that that activists are still in discussion about, how they can more equally treat the crimes that are getting committed against our community. Because in a study from 2000 to 2017, the crimes that were reported by the individuals as hate crimes, LGBT crimes are only second to crimes committed against African Americans in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And the police department takes those crimes very seriously when it comes to race. But as being the number two community that is having crimes committed against them, we're not so far getting that same type of attention.
I remember reading about a story of a trans woman who was standing on the corner, and it was alleged that guys came out and essentially beat her to death, and the Fresno Police Department misgendered her. What's the rate of solving cases, and are hate crimes against transgender people really a priority for the Fresno Police Department?
You know, it's hard for me to say what is or isn't their priority. That crime, it went years without being solved. That crime, from my recollection, was in 2016, possibly.
That sounds right.
And there was calls for for many months and years to have some progress on that case. And it almost seemed as though when someone was brought to justice in that case, it was, you know, just sort of, it happened by luck almost, that the person was back in the area and found that way. I would definitely like to see more done here in terms of the police and the justice system here.
Currently, Fresno, California is in the news for their minor league baseball team, which included Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the montage of people who are, quote, against freedom. What is everyday life like for those who identify as LGBT in the city of Fresno?
Well, we have a lot of people that that just for whatever reason, I don't know if it is the perceived or actual backlash from individuals in the community or their workplace, choose to not come out and live an authentic self here. And even in as an example, our Pride Parade that happened last Saturday, you know, we probably get 20% of or less of the actual LGBT individuals that are living in our community, because we're the third largest metropolitan area in the state, and yet we have this this fear, I believe, that individuals have of being identified. And then the greater concern too to us as a community organization is you get a lot of people here in the community that once they have finished high school or college, flee this area to a place that they feel is more accepting of them, and makes it even more difficult, because when you have a city council or elected leaders and you want them to respond to our community's needs, they want to see a large gathering of our community there to hold them accountable and to ask for that. And if they are fleeing this area, that makes it even more difficult to get any progress.
Within the LGBT community at large, there is a hierarchy of assimilation into the mainstream culture. Cis white gay men are usually at the top, while trans women, specifically African American trans women in particular, are at the bottom. How does this dynamic play out in the Fresno LGBT community from your vantage point?
Just to clarify, do you mean how does that work in terms of the leadership in the LGBT community in Fresno?
Not so much the leadership, but if you want to address that, that'd be cool. I mean, in terms of, like, in a lot of cases, I've been on an Office kick lately, so I'm thinking like characters like Oscar, where he's gay but he's accepted by his Dunder Mifflin coworkers, as opposed to an African American trans woman. They're like, everyone's experience within wider society is different, and how does that scale of assimilation play out in the LGBT people that you talk to?
Well, I think that we have something that might not be unique to this area, because I only have experience with here in the Central Valley.
Yeah.
When we have individuals that are going through hormone therapy or transitional surgery, and they have successfully completed that transition, I've noticed that we have a high percentage of individuals who will leave our community in terms of our organizations and rallies and participating in things, because they no longer want to be considered different from the gender that they now identify as, and don't want to have that that stigma attached that somebody might see them as ever being living as a different gender. And from our perspective, that's disappointing, because it further dilutes our community into where we're even more marginalized. So that's something that I notice happening here a lot.
Yeah. The number, once again, 503-231-8187. If you come from a small town and you've left for Portland, get on board, 503-231-8187. If you have any questions for Jason, he would be glad to take them. Fresno Pride, as you mentioned, was held last week, and the wider region around the city of Fresno, the San Joaquin Valley, is also known to be a very conservative area as well. Do you have any read on how far from around the valley do people travel for Fresno Pride?
Well, I think that we have people as far down south as Bakersfield and as far north as Merced that come here to Fresno. And the greater Central Valley has started to see more organizing and organizations forming. And so, for example, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, in a small town south of Fresno that's called Visalia, they had their second annual Pride Festival. And so we're seeing that slowly the community is expanding from us in Fresno, which is the largest city here in the Central Valley.
Is there any pushback from community groups to Fresno Pride?
I know that the city of Fresno puts up additional roadblocks every year to make it harder to organize a festival, which is pretty much the exact opposite of what you find in a more progressive city, where they're very willing to work with the committees that are putting on the Pride parades. I'm not personally on the Pride committee, but I know from speaking with them and hearing what's going on is that it just continues to be a very, very difficult process. And we don't have support from the mayor, for example. We're not getting a citywide proclamation or anything like that signed from the mayor, and that isn't unique to this mayor that we have now. The prior mayor was the same way.
Yeah. In 2017, the Fresno LGBT Community Center closed its door due to the difficulties of keeping an all-volunteer organization going. LGBT centers create community. They provide health services, often for various parts of the community that are underserved, and they advocate for the LGBT community within mainstream society. How does Pride or a number of other functions happen without an LGBT center in Fresno?
Well, the vast majority, probably 95% or more of the LGBT organizations in town are all 100% volunteer run. That is because Fresno is a very difficult economic area to live in, and unlike larger cities, we are not able to rely on our constituents to fund the organizations. So
yeah,
there's not the funding there to pay somebody to work full time or more than one person. And that's the same issue that we have, is that we rely on individuals to make donations, and that's not enough for us to fund somebody full time. So the work that we do is trying to split up the work amongst as many people as possible to continue to do the work at little to no cost.
The Fresno Community Center, as we mentioned, did close to the lack of funds and an all-volunteer staff. Meanwhile, groups like the Human Rights Campaign have had a huge drop in donations post Oberfeld versus Hedges. LGBT centers are notorious for differing quality depending on the size of the city and then the funding levels of the center. How do smaller conservative cities lobby big fundraising entities like HRC to make sure that communities like Fresno are in I don't know, Tupelo, Mississippi, for just to name a couple, have a fully funded LGBT infrastructure so they don't have to drive to San Francisco or Los Angeles to get basic services?
You know, that's a very good question. And when I was part of the community center on their board, you know, we had reached out to different community centers and to different large national organizations asking for funding and partnerships, but we did not ever reach a receptive ear in that regard. The organizations that are at the national level have their own priorities and projects, and supporting these smaller communities just is not something that they do. We in the past had a field office for Equality California, which is our statewide LGBT organization, and they only stayed here probably 6 to 8 months before they had expected that the local community would fund that office independently of their funds at the state level. And since that didn't happen, that had closed down as well.
Wow. Yeah. So like, what do you, in the vacuum of the services provided, what do LGBT people do? Do they just go to normal health clinics and hope the physicians treat them with dignity? Do they drive to Los Angeles if they have the means? Like, what's filling in the void?
So I know that in terms of transgender services, that there's basically one doctor that a majority of the organizations refer individuals to.
Sure.
And then we have a Planned Parenthood office that we refer people to. The for testing services, there is very, very limited weekday hours at our county health department.
Mm-hmm.
That does testing, but they don't have nights and weekends that they're available, just services are just very difficult to get to at this city and at this point in time. And I think that's why you see that Fresno is an epicenter for STDs like syphilis. Our city has decided to not put the funds into testing and distribution of condoms and educational campaigns.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And I know under Trump it's kind of an oxymoron to ask this, but HHS doesn't see this public health crisis, and they don't step in with any funding at all either?
I have not heard of any federal funding coming to our area, but like I said, when I had read that we have such a high prevalence of STDs here, it was surprising to me that there is not more being done from outside the city to help with the issues that we're running into, because they're completely preventable and identifiable if the funds were available.
Yeah. When I contacted you through LGBT Fresno on Facebook, there's an auto reply. It says, we're an all-volunteer, not-for-profit organization. We'll get back to you as quickly as possible. If you need immediate help, please text us at, and you give a phone number and reference LGBT Fresno. What does your group try to do to fill in the void?
Well, we try to be as responsive as possible. And then we also, we have monthly safe space activities where we invite individuals to come in that are part of our community or supportive of it, and just get out of the isolation, which is living here in the Central Valley and not being around like-minded people. So last night we had a board games night. we have movie nights, and we rely on our public library system to host us because there's no charge. But it has really been beneficial for people because that one night or two nights a month might be the only opportunity they have to feel secure and be around people that are like them.
And then building community,
very important.
Yeah, and building community builds solidarity, and that's how you make further gains within the city of Fresno or any smaller town. The number again, if you want to get on board, we're talking to Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno. We're discussing what life is like in a smaller conservative town for LGBT people since June is Pride Month. The number to get on board, 503-231-8187. Talk about the school board member, Burke. Is it Asha John?
Ashgian,
uh-huh. Yeah, it's an Armenian name. I love Armenians. I've had a lot of friends that are Armenian. Talk about what his comments are, and he's still on the board, isn't he?
No, he was removed. His term ended early this year, and he didn't speak a second term after all the controversy happened. So what had happened is he was the school board president for Fresno Unified School District, and he had come out and done an interview, and one of the things that he had volunteered in that interview was that if the youth were allowed to be exposed to LGBT individuals or to learn about them in school, that they would then be persuaded and learn that that's a viable lifestyle, and that they would choose to become gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, and could be persuaded to be that way just from learning about the contributions from our community or the history of our community. And so our organization had learned about that and done several interviews, and over the coming months after he had made that statement, had organized and rallied people to come to every school board meeting that had occurred, and to use the public comments section to remind the rest of the board and him that we were not happy with that and we wanted him to be removed. He never rescinded the comments. In fact, he almost doubled down on them because that he said that our community was the equivalent to the perpetrators of the Armenian genocide, is what he had said at a later school board meeting.
Yeah, I had seen that.
Mm-hmm. And along with that, with the process of this coming out, we had learned that during a deposition years earlier, that he admitted to going online and posting slanderous comments against our organization, and that really showed what kind of vitriol he has towards our community, that he had gone online and wrote really nasty things about our community and our organization.
Yeah, and I think in that rant he also called you outsiders to diminish your role, that you were just bust in here to cause trouble, but no, you were the community and you actually organized and tried to get him to resign.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was all true. And even though he did not seek re-election, we were disappointed that the school board absent him, or the other school board leadership, didn't ever decide to remove him, and they definitely have the ability to do that.
And I think that's a problem that as far as his comments, that's a wider pervasive argument that seems to be out there, especially among people in religious conservative communities, that they think that merely teaching kids about them will make them gay, whereas just you're teaching kids that we exist. That's kind of just the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
yeah.
True.
Talk about the rally during the Transgender Day of Visibility, when there was around 40 people on the sidewalk, and then there's three trucks, and they proceeded to roll coal on them. It was on the corner of Blackstone and Ness on March 31st of... It was either last year or this year. I forgot which one off the top of my head.
Yeah, that was this year. There are annual events that that happen with an organization in town. They're called Trans Emotion, and we go out to those events and as well. And what had occurred at that particular event was there was chanting and sign waving for that Transgender Day of Visibility, and
mm-hmm.
it's a chance for the community to be seen and raise awareness of the issues that are occurring, towards the transgender community. There were vehicles that had some large trucks, I guess, that had stopped and made lots of smoke, and the police department was called, and they had told the press that they were going to be able to identify the individuals and from footage, but we had never heard any more follow-up after the statements they made to the press.
Yeah. Is there anything you would like to leave our listeners with?
Well, just to say that if anyone is feeling like they'd like to contribute in any way, we accept people that want to volunteer virtually from anywhere in the country or the world, and we also are very thankful for any donations that can be made at our website. It's lgbtfresno.com/donate.
Okay.
And we're also happy to take questions by email or speak with anybody that might be curious about how it is to live here.
Yeah, I do appreciate your time. And my guest has been Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno. This is the Heather McCoy Show.
Thank you very much.
Up. dances on me.
Heather McCoy Show.
And welcome back to the Heather McCoy Show. Just wanted to clarify one thing with the Jason Scott interview. When I say rolling coal, if you don't know what that means, I don't know if it's an popular term, but it basically is a... I think it started in Texas, but it's a reaction to Toyota Priuses, where bros will get these big brodozer pickup trucks and then their diesels, and then they make them as polluted as possible by removing their catalytic converter and a number of other things. So if you're confused by what rolling coal meant, I don't know if that's in popular usage, but that's what that means. The other point of clarification I feel I need to say before I go off the air in like literally 1 minute is the question of why do I talk sports on the show, and that's a little bit unusual for KBU and Progressive Radio. And the reason I do that is because sports are a microcosm of society. When you go to a ballpark and you're surrounded, like if you're at a Mets game, you're at Citi Field, who took a bank bailout where millions of other people are suffering from housing crisis. You have owners that are billionaires that were ripped off in the Bernie Madoff scandal in case of the Wilpons, which own the Mets. So there are stories to be told within the concept of that. As far as on the field action in particular, I only talk about women's sports in that regards, because if you look, turn on ESPN, ESPN2, FS1, FS2, there's countless hours dedicated, and I'm guessing they're going to talk about it right now. They're going to be talking about how injured are the Golden State Warriors? Can they come back? And that narrative is always driven for men's sports 24/7. It's almost as persistent as the right-wing propaganda around anything, any issue. But women's sports rarely gets to be heard from, especially just admiring their athletic skills and abilities. And that's why I talk sports on this show. And the other reason is these women are warriors and they barely get paid. So Alex Morgan goes on The Daily Show and talks about U.S. women national team players not getting paid. And while that is a problem, and they do bring in profits for the federation, the NWSL players only make about $14,000 a year, the journey women. One of my favorite players plays for the Orlando Pride, Maddie Evans, and she went off to coach a mid-tier college team because it paid more than playing. And so if she was male and in European soccer, she would be at least a millionaire. So it very much speaks to wage disparity as well. And so KBU is, I'm trying to correct that narrative, and what we talk about is part of everyday conversation. This has been the end of the Heather McCoy Show. I don't have smoke signals from the Speakeasy, my music show this week. It's in every other show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I'm going to be back next Thursday at 10. Until then... Have a great afternoon. Black Book Talk is at 11 between the, or 11:30 between the covers is at 11. The music starts at noon. Then we have our afternoon PA block that starts with Democracy Now at 4. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next Thursday.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 11 o'clock. Coming up next on Between the Covers, they feature an interview with Sofia Shamayev about her new memoir, Mother Winter. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with your hosts, Patricia Welsh, Obie Hill, and Emma Jackson.
Cool art, live music, cider, wine, and snacks. Heck yeah.
Come out to KBOO's first ever First Friday Art Walk event on June 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. The First Friday Art Walk is in Portland's vibrant East Side Arts District and is the gateway into Portland's thriving arts culture, including more than 23 independent galleries.
Start your night off at the KBOO Studios next First Friday, June 7th. KBOO is featuring the work of two brilliant artists, Justin Auld and Amy Kutab. There will be live music, snacks, wine available thanks to Hip Chicks Do Wine, and cider courtesy of Cider Riot.
You will also get a chance to tour our studios. Check out KBOO.fm for more info. That's Friday, June 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. See you there.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Grendel's Coffee